What is up? What is going on, everybody? This week, we're getting a little gust from the gods, and we'll do it on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Threequel. As always, I am one of your three co-hosts, Ethan Klein, here with me, Mike Duranik and Brad Miller. Gentlemen, how are we doing this evening?
Doing great. Got a great movie here to talk about, so it'll be a fun one.
Yeah, I'm doing well. Glad to be back here with you guys, talking a couple more movies as we move forward. And this one this evening, I think, will be an interesting one to kind of discuss. I know it's a big favorite of Brad, so excited to get your guys' thoughts on it.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the sports movies that we've talked about a lot that has not come up yet on the show. It was Brad's pick as we close out the month of August. Actually, I don't know if it was Brad's pick or if we ended up making it a group pick, but either way, a movie that was an easy pick for this month here. So let's just hop right into it, guys. Tin Cup came out in August of 1996. Kevin Costner, Rene Russo. Gentlemen, what was your first experience with Tin Cup? I have a feeling it was not in theaters, but, you know, could prove me wrong. I have been wrong before. What was your first experience with it? And then what did you bring into this rewatch for this week's episode?
Well, I'm glad you said the year, because I could not remember back if I had seen this in theaters or not. But however, I would have been 15, I think, when this came out. What year did you say? 96?
Yes.
Yeah, so I turned 16 later that year. So I doubt as a 15-year-old that I got my parents or a friend or someone to agree to take me to this. So I'm pretty sure that, yes, I probably saw it as a probably a Blockbuster rental at the time then, since I was only 15.
Mine is even more simple. I saw it for the first time as I was preparing for this podcast, and all I took into it was Kevin Costner and golf.
Yeah, my first experience with it was not in theaters as a one-year-old. I think I was in high school. Maybe early college. It was just on TV. Didn't know anything about it other than I was a fan of Kevin Costner. Had no idea that he had a golf movie. And from the first time I saw it up until now, being probably the fifth, sixth, seventh time that I've seen it, I've always really enjoyed it. And the ending still always makes me want to throw up. So that just the sheer pain I feel watching the ending of this movie, but there's a reason that it sticks out. It's definitely a bold choice, and we will get into that. Before we get too far into it, guys, let's talk Rotten Tomatoes game. It's actually Brad versus me this week. Now we're kind of getting a revolving door here. A little bit of a caveat last week with Don't Breathe. How could any of us have given it the actual score that it had? Brad, you won by being something close to 40 to 50 points off, but you did win. You were a point closer playing the game. So let's play it with Tin Cup, Brad, and you're going first. What is the sitting Rotten Tomatoes score of Tin Cup?
If I'm guessing the score that it should get, I'm going to say 104. If I'm guessing to win the game, I'm going to say probably 89.
That's tough. I think that, I don't know, something tells me that you and I, and I'm not sure where Mike is at yet, but you and I love this movie more than it's grouped against other Kevin Costner sports films. I think the other ones are actually held in a little bit higher regard. It's a little more niche with it being golf. So I'm going to play the game and say 88. I'm going to go underneath you. I don't think that critics would have gotten this into the 90s. Mike?
So 104 was Brad's initial one, and then he goes to 89. And so I'm going to tell you the audience score first. We'll see if the audience agrees with Brad. And the answer is they do not. The audience score of this one is a 65, Brad. A 65.
Idiots. Now, idiots.
The critics gave it more esteem. But Ethan is going to win this week. The critics had it at a robust 72.
Wow.
When did Pappy Drew become a critic of movies?
Oh, what a throwback. We have not called out Pappy Drew in a while.
Well, you know, Pappy is probably still listening, I would imagine, because how can you hate something that you don't listen to, and probably intentionally trying to drag down at least the audience score on this.
All right, so 72, and the audience was even a bit lower, but 72 is the number there. So, Brad, I know what you and I's answer is going to be, and it's going to be it's wrong, but I'm curious, since, Mike, this is your first interaction with this film, I want to start with you. 72%, Mike, is Rotten Tomatoes correct with that number for Tin Cup?
Well, it's tough. I really am looking forward to hearing you guys talk about this, and Brad in particular, as he's such a big fan, because as this was my first viewing of this, I think that there may be some nuances that Brad appreciates and you may appreciate, Ethan, more so than me. I thought it was a fine movie. So, you know, based off of my initial impressions, I don't know that 72 is right. I think it could be a hair higher. But I don't know that I would put it higher than upper 70s, low 80s. I probably would have guessed an 80 myself were I playing the game this week. And so, you know, I do find it interesting. I wanted to look it up. Happy Gilmore was a 61 on the critics, so they had it significantly lower. But the audience score for Happy Gilmore was a full 20 points higher than this one. It came in at an 85, just to kind of give you another 96 golf movie that's in no way, shape, or form as serious, but yeah. Same year. So I thought that was an interesting point of comparison. So yeah, long story short, I'll say that they're a little short. I don't think that they're as short as probably you guys think, but I would have put it at about an 80.
I mean, I was, so for me, yes, I think Rotten Tomatoes is incorrect. I have not put this in my rankings yet. It will be an upper half movie for me. I've always loved this movie. It might be my favorite Kevin Costner sports film. We can get into that in a little bit. But what I have an understanding for why this is not as beloved as his other ones. And I think, and Brad, I don't know if you would agree with this, but this movie, especially golf, is already a niche thing to make a movie about. I think this movie best represents, if you golf consistently or inconsistently, but if you've had a point in your life where you golf with your buddies or whatever, this movie drills into even that more than any other golf movie. Like, I mean, Happy Gilmore is just goofy and like really truly has nothing to do with the game of golf. Then there's like a couple of really serious golf movies that have no humor at all. And then there's this that is perfectly made for like the Saturday golfer drinking with his buddies. And that's such a small group to hit. And I think it hits a grand slam trying to do that. But I understand why this movie is not beloved across the board by every single person that's seen it, because it is just such a small bracket that it hits, is how I feel about that number. So I think it's wrong, but I get why it is where it is.
It's wrong, and there's no excuse for it. You can't justify it. So, not just because I like this film. Like, I guess let me kind of dive into this a little bit. First off, what are you critiquing it against? You know, that there is not a movie like this. If it, the movie that comes to mind, honestly, is one that we've done on this podcast, and that's Major League. You get the down and out guy that was great that, you know, is no longer great. And, you know, you got the love story, you've got the whole thing, and you've got the redemption, and, you know, is he not going to make it? Is, you know, and it, it is what exactly what it's supposed to be. I mean, if you're expecting this to be Caddyshack, or you're expecting this to be, you know, the Legend of Bagger Vance, or like a different type of golf movie that has come out, like, that's not what this is. I think they nailed it for exactly what it was supposed to be. Kevin Costner was fantastic. You know, like, I hate to call another grown man like adorable, but like he is, you know, like, there's nothing about him that you would dislike. Or, I mean, there are maybe some things you should dislike about this guy who's essentially just kind of pissing his life away, but he's lovable. You root for him. And, you know, like, even the thing at the end where he's blowing it, like, you kind of get it, because he's staying true to himself. And had he done anything different than that, he's not Tin Cup, you know. And, you know, Ethan, you and I, we golfed today. How many times did we quote this movie? And it's a part of our culture. It's a part of our vocabulary as a golfer. You know, like, this is the thing where, you know, you were we deciding to go for the greener layup, and we ask ourselves, what would Romeo tell us to do? Or if you need a little, what was the word from the gods? The gust was it breeze gods. Gust from the gods? Like, do we need that to clear this pond? You know, like, I think I even asked you on the one hole where you were kind of falling apart, if you were trying to like top 10 cup score, on that hole. Cause you know, you called it the hole from hell, but like I get it. If you tell me to go critique a movie that I don't understand, you know, I might get this. If you're a golfer and you fit into that niche that you're talking about, or you kind of get into this style of film, like, what did they do wrong? I want to know what they did wrong to get a lower score there. What part missed? You know, like, I understand if there was a section of the movie that wasn't entertaining, or if there was, you know, just this weird, stupid plot thing, like, you know, like, there was none of that. So I guess, what is it that as a critic you're looking at and saying, you know what, I expected this and it didn't hit the mark, or this is where they left me wanting more. Where is it? Where's the hole in it? It's not too long. It's not too short. It's got the right amount of comedy, the right amount of really everything to me. It doesn't miss, at least to the point of a 72. Like, 89, you know, okay, it misses just a little bit maybe, but yeah, 72 I think is pretty unfair for what this movie's supposed to be. So there's some more nuance to it, but we can save that for a little bit later discussion. But also too, I guess, just to say, like, I have enjoyed golf for most of my life, and I did play a little bit at a younger age, and maybe this just came out at the right place, right time, and it hit me for nostalgia, and it just appeals to me, and it has my whole life. I don't know. If I had watched this for the first time at 41, you know, maybe that score would be a little bit lower, but yeah, it's just, I don't see where it missed to get a score that low.
I think the biggest thing that this movie does end up deserving credit for, I mean, yes, Kevin Costner is incredibly likable, incredibly charismatic. We all know that. There's a reason that he's had the career that he's had. Cheech Marin, same thing. It takes a lot of guts to end a sports movie with not just a loss, but an implosion of epic proportions just to prove a point. And I think, again, the first time I saw it, I was like, because it sets itself up, right? He's going to make the shot. He hasn't made the shot. This is the time he makes the shot. And 99 out of 100 movies would have it end that way. And this one doesn't. And then it's not even the next one or the next one or the next one. And it's just, it takes a lot to commit to your movie being that way, and a lot of trust in what they did leading up to it, that at the end of it, him winning isn't what matters. him being Tin Cup is what matters. Him getting the girl is what matters. And when you walk into this movie, I don't think you're anticipating that. And that could be the other side of it, too. If a lot of people walked into this looking for one thing and didn't like it when they walked out, that can lower the score a little bit. But I've always appreciated it, even though it horrifies me to watch him throw that round away. But I do understand it. Let's talk Kevin Costner. I feel like...
Well, before you get in that, you talked about it being an implosion. But, like, I would argue that it wasn't. I mean, at least for him, because there's one line that he says towards the end there about, like... I forget what he says about a tie or second place or whatever he says to Don Johnson's character. It would have killed him more to lay up, or once he went for it and it went in the water, the best I think he could do at that point was tie. And it would have killed him more, I think, to then admit that, okay, I'm going to lay up, I'm going to tie, and then we're going to go into sudden death. Then it would be to be known for the guy that went for it and failed. Like, you know, and Rene Russo did a great job of selling him on that, because I think he kind of came back around to reality a little bit, saying, like, I just gave away the open. But, you know, like, it's Brett Favre like. You know, I was trying to think of another athlete that kind of stands out there, but, like, you need to have that guy that at some point, you know what, he might fail every once in a while, but it's going to be entertaining. And without that guy, you know, then you can't have, I don't know, Ryan Tannehill or something that is just consistent and good and not going to take those big chances. So I don't know if it, I get what you're saying. Typically you want to see that guy win. But I think that's what makes this movie great. It's just, it took that turn and it was surprising, and it left me wanting more.
Let's talk Kevin Costner. We did just recently do Field of Dreams, so we've had some Kevin Costner conversation. I guess I'm just curious where you guys went, because I kind of alluded to this, and Mike, I have no idea where your answer would be on this. Brad, it seems like feels like you're more passionate about this than the last one we did, but just in terms of the sports movies, so the big one, you know, Field of Dreams, For Love of the Game, Bull Durham, this... Where does this fit for you guys in the Kevin Costner sports realm?
You left off Draft Day. Come on, man.
Oh, sorry. And Draft Day. Yes.
Mike, you've sat quietly for a while. Let's hear some thoughts on this for you.
So to be clear, Dances with Wolves does not count as one of his...
No, but Mr.
Nor does Wyatt Earp.
3,000 Miles to Graceland does, though.
Oh, okay, there you go. That's the sequel to Mr. 3000, the Bernie Mac movie, I'm assuming. So
yes.
Okay, so for me, as much as I would like to make an argument for Draft Day, because that was a movie that I think hit it out of the park in terms of being exactly what it set out to be, as ridiculous as it was.
Yes.
And it should not have been entertaining, and I should not have enjoyed it. And yet by the end, I was like, okay, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. But setting that aside, I think for me, I have not seen For Love of the Game. So I would rank the other three as Field of Dreams, and then this, and then Bull Durham. So I will say, you know, watching this through, I would rather rewatch Costner in this and this performance than Bull Durham, which is not something I would have thought likely heading into it. So I guess that does say something positive about his performance in this one.
Yeah, as much as I'd like to put this ahead of Field of Dreams, I can't. I have Field of Dreams in my top 10 of movies we've done on this podcast at number 10, and I have this one coming in at number 17. So both ranked very high. Well done, Kevin Costner. But yeah, that goes a little higher. I would say for me, Draft Day is probably third, because it's just one of those that I can watch once or twice a year and be very entertained by, even though they should do away with the romance part of that one, especially the fact that she's pregnant. That's just, okay, whatever.
But it adds so much intrigue, Brad.
The pregnancy?
Yeah, I love it.
No, they don't even reveal it till the end.
Well, you know.
And then for me, Bull Durham. But in fairness, I have not seen Bull Durham in a really long time. So at this point for me, it sets at 4. And for Love of the Game was, I'm a big Kelly Preston fan. However, that one, RIP Kelly Preston, that one comes in at probably 5th on the list for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I've just cooled on Bull Durham so much over the years. I mean, whatever you think about the love relationship in Draft Day, him and Susan Sarandon and Bull Durham is like bottom tier for me of like any role. I can't do it. Can't stand it. Can't do it. The last 45 minutes of that movie, I think, is awful. It's a tight race between this and Field of Dreams for second for me. I will always have For Love of the Game up at the top. I know that's going to sound like blasphemy, and Mike, you haven't seen it, and Brad just put it where he put it. I don't know. I've just always loved that movie. It's always hit differently for me. I think it's a really great, like, romantic story about baseball. But this is up there.
Romantic story about baseball, and you're ranking it ahead of Field of Dreams? Does it get more romantic about baseball than that?
Like I said, I know it's crazy. I know it's weird. There's just something, the way that they put that together, and it's just a guy saying goodbye to baseball, and I don't know. I've always loved it. Obviously, the common factor is Kevin Costner, and I think what carries through, even into his not-sports movies, is, I have always been a fan. Even his lesser movies, I just made a joke about 3,000 Miles to Graceland. It's awful. I wouldn't turn it off if I stumbled upon it on TV. Like, the guy just has entertained the hell out of everyone for, 40 years? Yeah, 40-plus years. And now he's rolling with Yellowstone, which, I mean, if you told me I could only have one Kevin Costner thing for the rest of my life, it would probably be that. So as much as we love all this, he still has more things that he's doing currently. So the guy's a rock star. Rene Russo, we talked about with Major League. She's fantastic. She always has been. Whenever she pops up and stuff, I love it. You know, I think we did Lethal Weapon. I think she added a ton to that franchise when she came in. And as his love interest, I think she's fantastic. Behind the Camera is pretty interesting. This is written and directed by the same guy who wrote and directed Bull Durham. Whether my feelings on it matter or not, guy's had a pretty great career. He also wrote White Men Can't Jump, which we've done, and not Bad Boys, but Bad Boys 2. So, I mean, congrats to Mr. Shelton for having himself quite the career. Let's do favorite scene, fellas. What was your favorite? Oh, how could I not mention Don Johnson? I don't know if you guys are Don Johnson fans, but what a great asshole. I could have worded that differently, but
you really could have, because I don't know how you know how great Don Johnson's asshole is, but yeah, we'll leave that one right there.
Yeah, I think that I'm going to try to save you here, Ethan, but it's a good thing that you're the editor on this, because if Brad was editing this podcast, you would have so many sound clips of things that you said. Oh, boy.
Don Johnson, great asshole.
You know, to our listeners out there, just be thankful that we aren't popular enough to create merchandise, because if so, it would not be work approved in any environment.
No,
you know, we'd have a shirt that also said Pappy Drew, great asshole.
I just want a shirt that says Pappy Drew. That's it.
Yeah.
So I think that Don Johnson did a great job of playing the Shooter McGavin character, for lack of a better term, right? But playing it in a more straight movie sort of sense, and did a great job with it. I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention Don Johnson and his role in this. It was a great turn for him.
Yeah, I watched a lot of Miami Vice reruns as a kid. I've always, whenever he pops up and stuff, you know, the thing that I think is like the peak Don Johnson for me will be forever Big Daddy. I think that's what they called him in Django. I mean, that the whole thing is amazing, the fact that he's in that. But he pops up and stuff all the time, and I think it's always a treat when he does, and I think he's really, really good in this. As an asshole, but like, yeah, as an asshole, not with his, but but because this movie is grounded in more reality than Happy Gilmore, like Shooter McGavin's just a terrible human being with no redeeming qualities or rhyme or reason. Would you not also be upset if you walked up and this bum ass guy who's thrown his life away was groping your girlfriend? Yes, you would. Like,
yeah,
he has.
I points. Guess. Like, question: What is it that he actually does in this movie that makes him an asshole?
There's some, like, they always joke, like they joke about how he hates like old people and kids, right?
Right,
and
then, but did you ever see? We never see that. The only thing we saw one moment where he passed up the one lady for the more attractive lady. You know, like,
well, that's you're missing. For me. You're missing the entire scene where the kid asks him for an autograph, and as soon as he's away from like the cameras, he just tells the kid off, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I did forget about that, I guess.
And yeah. I think you could just, I mean, what you're reading into his nature, like, again, yes, he walks up on this dude groping his girlfriend. Not cool. But you can tell he is a sadistic person. Like, he not only wants to just be better, he wants to embarrass and break down this guy just for his, like, he's a dick. Like,
I think he's every bit as much of a jerk as in this type of a movie as Shooter McGavin is. And the other difference is in Happy Gilmore, Shooter McGavin is a caricature of the villain.
Yes.
Where in this, it's a, what you could see to be a real life, you know, which you could see on a professional golfer. I mean, we've seen it with a number of them through the years. I think most recently with some of the stuff that Phil Mickelson said and did as he was leaving for the money and everything. So this was a realistic villain. But yeah, I definitely think they did a good job, actually, as you're saying it, Brad. They showed you enough to infer that the guy was not a good guy, but also gave you enough reason to see where he was coming from. It made the character more whole, and so by the end you were just kind of annoyed by him as opposed to just being frustrated with him. I don't know what I said there that made Brad laugh, but
more whole. About his whole.
That's right, folks, we don't just have to say googly juice to get each other laughing. We can say other things. I do think that is, though, why I will love this movie always, Brad, why, you know, you have such a big passion for this movie. It feels lived in, and it doesn't feel like caricatures. It feels like people you could know, and that adds to the heart of the movie. All of the stuff that Romeo says, I mean, I'd be shocked if it didn't pop up at some point in our favorite lines. He feels like a real friend that just wants to help out his buddy or wants something better for his buddy, and all that stuff. Just all the characters in this, it feels real. It feels lived in. The scenes, you know, with the doing the punch shot out to knock the crane off of the thing. Like, yes, is that stupid? Absolutely. If any of us would try it, that bar would, you know, be replacing a window. Yes. Not that we could pull that off, but the craziness of, like, again, that group of people, the weekend golfers, like, yeah, I bet I could, you know, snap hook a iron around this. I bet that could work. I bet I could pull this off. We've all been there. We've all done stupid enough shit like that. He has the ability to pull it off, but it makes it feel more real. It makes it feel lived in. And I think that's what helps make this a fantastic movie. Let's talk about what our favorite parts of this movie was. Favorite scene, guys. Where are you going for favorite scene in Tin Cup? And why are we all agreeing on the runaway correct answer?
Do share. I'm interested to see what the runaway correct answer is.
It's the 7-iron. It is hands down the 7-iron. Romeo breaking every club in his bag because they cannot stand to work together, and him winning that tournament or qualifier, whatever it is, with simply his 7-iron, which has led to, that's one of the lasting legacies of this movie. I heard for years as I was golfing in high school and early in college, people say, like, you know, if you would just walk out here with a 7-iron, I bet your score would improve. Like, what? That seems like a stupid notion. The hell are these people talking about? Because Cup freaking did it, so why can't we do it? And that has lasted. So, Tin Cup and his 7-iron after Romeo just snaps off every other club in the bag. That is the best scene in Tin Cup.
Mike, where are you at with it?
Well, I think probably the only scene that I knew about this movie was the scene at the end where he just keeps on dropping the ball and plunk, plunk, plunk. And so I did know about that scene walking into it. I didn't know the context. All I knew is that he didn't win at the end. And I think that was probably because of a podcast that, whether it was one that you guys did that I listened to or one that we all did together back on, Of Course I'm Right, with the sports, March Madness bracket. I knew that. And I have to say, it played really, really well. Even knowing it was coming, even knowing that he was going to miss that shot and then do it again and again and again, I've got to give that credit where credit's due. That that scene was particularly well done because, as you said, it's gut-wrenching. Even if, you know, I am very familiar with golf. I watch golf. I have been known to play golf poorly on occasion, but I certainly am not into golf or playing golf the way that you guys are. And so even for me, it was gut-wrenching, and I appreciated it. So that's where I would go.
Yeah, 2 out of 3, Ethan, I'm with you. Even though it's cringy watching them argue and then break those clubs, not knowing where it's going to stop and then realizing, okay, well, he's got the 7-iron left. And yeah, I think by far that's the best series of scenes in that film. And it did lead to there's a kid from high school that still owes me a Scotty Cameron golf club, a putter, because in homage to this scene, I guess I bet him that on a I could par a 5, I could get a par 5 on a par 5 with my 5 wood. A lot of fives there kind of threw me off, but so yeah, 2 shots, you know, the drive, the approach shot, then I chipped onto the green with my 5 wood and I 2-putted. And of course he thought there's no way I could do it. So he reneged and did not give me the Scotty Cameron putter. So I have not forgotten. I still want that putter. And when I see you again, I will attempt to take it. So yeah, it was not a 7-iron for me. It was a 5-wood, but that was my Tin Cup moment.
Love that. Favorite line, fellas, where are you going?
Oh, wow. I completely forgot that we do favorite lines, and maybe I'll follow up you guys if you have one, because I'll have to give this some thought for a second.
There's a lot of really good lines in this. Yeah. A lot of good dialogue. I think just to highlight one that made me chuckle, and just it also kind of merged with the scene and the way they did it. You know, he's got the 2-iron, hits the drive, and, you know, I've learned my lesson. I'm going to play it smart. I'm going to do this. And he's be humble. And then it cuts immediately to 83. Well, you're humble now, Holmes. And he goes, I was hungover. Well, that may have been a coaching error on my part. I just love the interplay between the two of them there. And particularly just a well shot scene there, the way that it went from him, you know, be humble, hits it, and then immediately cuts to first round 83. I thought that was pretty well done.
That's pretty fantastic. I mean, everything Romeo says is my favorite line. The golfer in me, I mean, the one that actually gets said the most, kind of as a joke, but also hoping that the golf gods don't come after you, is El Hozel. If, you know, once he starts getting the shanks, that's the best look. But I think my favorite one that just like sticks is, if I had to do it all over again, I'd still hit that shot. And his response of, man, you'd bury yourself alive just to prove you could handle the shovel. It's like you said, just their interactions, anything, any conversation they have is my favorite. Brad, do you have anything that stuck out?
I think the one I'm going to go with, I don't think it's my favorite, but for its uniqueness, I'll point it out, is just when he did finally decide to try to get him through the shanks, get him over the shanks, and he's like, you know, take this and put it in this pocket and put this behind this ear, and he's just taking him down this string of endless, like, crazy things just to see if something will work, and of course it does, but yeah, I'll point that one out.
All right, guys, I think that will do it for our conversation of Tin Cup. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us as we talk this over. Next week, I say this all the time, but it's the way we do it. Shifting gears, we're going to be talking Seven. Not much bright, fun, sunny happiness there. But before we do get to that, I do want to leave everyone with the greatest piece of advice. May not be the best line, but the best piece of advice that Tin Cup could get everyone. Just remember, y'all, sex and golf are the two things you don't have to be good at to enjoy. That will do it for us. For Mike, for Brad, I'm Ethan, and we'll see you next time.